Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection partner ExpressJet, with direct flights from Tallahassee to Atlanta connecting to over 315 destinations worldwide. Fares and information available online at delta.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
A much-touted expansion of Florida's corporate tax scholarship program has imploded amid disagreement over requiring voucher students to take state exams.
When the sponsor of the bill asks to have the bill withdrawn from any further consideration by the Senate, that's an indication that the sponsor has changed his mind about the prospects of the bill.
Also tonight, a bill granting in-state college tuition to undocumented immigrants passes the full House and gets moving in the Senate.
This was a difficult decision for me to make to sponsor this bill. I mean, as a Republican who's got an election this year.
We'll also talk about juvenile justice, spring cleaning, and we'll hop on our bicycles for a quick spin around the capital city. On the final day of the third week of the 2014 Florida lawmaking session, I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capital Report. One thing that quickly becomes apparent after watching a few lawmaking sessions is that anything can happen and surprises can come at any time. Just such a situation erupted suddenly in the Florida Senate yesterday. A planned expansion of the state school voucher program went spinning off the tracks to the great disappointment of the program's backers, which included the legislative leadership. Lynn Hatter reports what was once billed as a top priority of those leaders now appears to be going nowhere.
Florida's corporate tax scholarship program gives businesses tax breaks when they help funnel cash to families hoping to offset the cost of private school. Several studies have shown the program has resulted in savings for the state. That's because Florida spends more on public school students than it gives to families in the form of vouchers. House Speaker Will Weatherford and Senate President Don Gates had touted what they had called a massive expansion of the program as a priority for the legislature this year. But it was derailed late Thursday when the sponsor of the Senate bill, Bradenton Republican Bill Galvano, pulled the plug, withdrawing the proposal from consideration. On Friday, both Galvano's Senate and district offices said they couldn't reach the senator for comment, but House Speaker Will Weatherford weighed in on Galvano's decision Thursday.
You know, quitting on the thousands of parents and families and children that are waiting to get an opportunity of choice for their child is a disappointment. And but you know, when I was younger, I memorized the Serenity Prayer and said, God, grant me the serenity to know the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I can't control what happens in the Senate.
Weatherford had backed the voucher expansion, which would also have allowed state sales taxes to be used for scholarships. More families would have qualified for the plan, too, as it was set to raise the income limit. But over 5 years, that would raise the cost of the program to $870 million annually. And tapping into the state's main source of revenue did not sit well with many Democrats who had come to support the program in recent years. Senate leaders wanted voucher students in private schools to take the same tests as their public school counterparts, an issue private school administrators like Jason Flom from Tallahassee's Cornerstone Learning Center noted could lead some private schools to drop their participation in the program.
Depending on what the expectations are for what students are expected to do, it could increase the hurdle for, you know, the number of schools that would accept it.
Only one-fourth of the students in the schools that participate in the scholarship program are, in fact, scholarship students.
That's Step Up for Students Policy Director John East. Step Up for Students is the nonprofit that administers the corporate tax scholarship program.
So it's delicate then when you ask the other three-fourths of students, as well as the one-fourth on the scholarship, hey, you might need to change your test. Maybe you should change your test. Or, in the alternative, maybe the school has to give two different sets of tests. It's logistically, it's a challenge.
The two chambers could not reach an agreement on the testing provisions. Senate President Don Gates says he's also disappointed by Galvano's move to withdraw the bill.
You know, I had hoped that we would be able to do two things at the same time. One, to expand the opportunity for low-income families to have more choice in education, and at the same time bring financial and academic accountability to this program, the Tax Credit Scholarship Program. Apparently, we're not going to be able to do that this session, but hope springs eternal.
The news was greeted with cheers from the state's largest teachers union, the Florida Education Association, which has long opposed vouchers. The bill could be revived through parliamentary procedures, however. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Committees in the Florida House and Senate both passed bills this week giving children of undocumented immigrants in-state college tuition. As Jessica Palumbo reports, it's been a decade since Democrats started pushing the measure, which the House approved on a two-thirds vote.
In 2012, Jorge Tume was among Florida's first undocumented immigrants approved for what's called deferred action status under a presidential executive order. That means he has a driver's license and he can work an office job. But although he's lived in Florida since he was seven, he pays the higher out-of-state tuition rate to attend Miami-Dade College, where he studies business and film. He says he started saving up in high school.
The way I did it was, you know, just work every day. I actually dedicate myself in washing cars.
He says he still cleans houses and offices when money gets tight. But a bill now heading to the Senate would give students who've been in Florida for at least 4 years the same discounted college tuition as residents with citizenship. Legislative Democrats have been pushing the idea for the past decade, but the bills moving this year are sponsored by Republicans, Miami Representative Jeanette Nunez and Clearwater Senator Jack Latvala, who describes himself this way.
There's not anybody in this room that feels stronger about securing the borders of our country and keeping people who are not citizens out of our country and using the process that we have in place to become citizens. Nobody here that's stronger on that issue than I am.
He said that to the Senate Education Committee, where the bill eked out a 5-4 victory. Latvala says lawmakers need to face the reality that thousands of undocumented students are living in Florida and paying, at minimum, sales taxes. He points to the example of a young man he met who just finished college.
Well, he's paid his way as far as he can go, and now he's going to graduate school. He's made his way. Why penalize these young people for what their parents did 25 or 26 years ago?
These kids and adults, because they are adults, are not being punished.
Melbourne Representative John Tobia was among the 33 Republicans voting no on the bill in the House chamber Thursday. He says he's shocked the bill even made it to the floor.
We do spend tens of thousands of dollars educating them the K-12 environment. Now we turn around and educate them at university level and then potentially medical school. And then they can have their residency or practice medicine in the state of Florida. Make matters worse, they would have taken up a spot of someone that could.
Tobia points out the state Supreme Court recently ruled an undocumented law school graduate cannot practice law. Plus, he says he can't justify extending the in-state tuition benefit to non-citizens when the children of military service members based in Florida still pay the out-of-state rate. After Thursday's House vote, Speaker Will Weatherford said he respects his colleagues' opinions but supports the bill.
I think it was a historic victory for the children of the state that are waiting for that opportunity, for that chance to have upward mobility.
Still, other lawmakers have argued undocumented students have access to college and that should suffice. But future House Democratic leader Mark Pafford says that's not good enough.
I think, you know, when you step in the way of a natural progression of education, you're not helping anybody. You know, I think the more people we can ramp up and allow them to gain knowledge makes Florida better. And everybody in every situation in Florida should have that opportunity. You know, it shouldn't just be me.
Pafford says the House vote was bittersweet because a last-minute amendment extended the time students are required to have lived in the state from 3 to 4 years. U.S. citizens get Florida residency after just 1 year. And he says people who've lived here almost their whole lives shouldn't have to wait any longer. In Miami, Jorge Toomey says even if the bill doesn't pass, he hopes to use his anticipated degrees to get into filmmaking so he can turn a camera on people like himself.
So the documentary, like I like to do, is mostly about my undocumented students, the struggles that they go through, the obstacles. That they, you know, we break through these obstacles, but, you know, they shouldn't be just because of your legal status.
Although the House passing the bill sends a message to the Senate, its fate in that chamber remains uncertain after its rocky start in its first committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a slew of measures is headed to the floor after they pass their last committee stop today, including a bill aimed at addressing juvenile sentencing.
Yesterday there was a young kid, as I understand it, 17, sentenced to life in prison for a heinous crime. We certainly don't want some of these monsters who cannot be reformed to simply walk back out onto the streets, but we do have to fall within this needle.
As lawmakers consider a bill to protect the state's springs, home builders worry septic tanks are being unfairly singled out.
A septic system can be installed properly and work, function, and not hurt or damage the environment.
And we'll tag along with Florida Public Radio's Stan Jastrzebski as he dodges homicidal motorists on his 10-speed.
I travel to the Capitol a lot during the legislative session, but I've never traveled on my bicycle with a police escort. Until today, that is.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust. Empowerment. Education. Employment.
The House Judiciary Committee passed a handful of measures this week aimed at helping kids, all of which are now headed to the floor. As Sasha Cordner reports, they range from a bill hoping to address juvenile life sentencing to a bill toughening the penalties against teachers who step over the line with their students.
One of the first bills to pass unanimously is a measure called the Stop Harassing Underage Teens Act, authored by Lithia Republican Representative Jake Rayburn.
This bill was actually brought to me by a group of high school students who recognize that we have a problem. It's a problem that we've seen statewide, but especially in my home county. This bill increases the felony degree for sexual offenses committed against students by authority figures, and it also increases the severity ranking.
Now, if a 25-year-old teacher, for example, has sex with a 16-year-old, it's a second-degree felony. Rayburn's bill bumps that up to a first-degree felony charge. And as a mother of two kids, Fort Myers Republican Representative Heather Fitzenhagen says she supports the bill.
Most teachers are outstanding human beings, and we place a fiduciary responsibility on them to take care of our children on a daily basis and teach them. So to be able to step up the penalties for those who are violating that special responsibility that we charge them with, I think is a wonderful piece of legislation.
There's also a piece of legislation cracking down on a type of drug that's made its way into popular culture. That's Miley Cyrus singing about the street drug known informally as Molly. Pensacola Republican Representative Clay Ingram's bill aims to make sure three of the synthetic compounds used to make that drug are illegal in Florida. He says his legislation builds on Attorney General Pam Bondi's war on synthetic drugs, which are often tailored to minors.
So our strategy now, and the Attorney General has taken the lead on this and done a fantastic job, is that she identifies, or as drugs are found on the street and new compounds are identified, she issues an emergency order to ban those. And then as we come to the legislative session, it's up to us then to put those newly identified banned compounds into statute. And so that's what this does. And I want to let you know that we're down to six. So I think we are having an effect.
Andy says he can tell all their efforts are working.
In South Florida, there was a case where there was an arrest made, and the compound that the person was caught with was not on the federally banned list, but it was banned here in Florida. And they were able to make an arrest and prosecute because of the work we've done here.
That bill also passed unanimously. So did a measure addressing Florida's juvenile life sentencing issue. There are what's called Graham defendants who are sentenced to life without parole for committing a serious felony. There are also the Miller defendants who receive life without parole for committing or helping to commit a homicide. They're given those names because of Supreme Court rulings that it's unconstitutional to give juvenile offenders life without a possibility of parole. And Tampa Republican Representative James Grant is charged with addressing that issue in Florida. He amended his bill Friday to create a tiered system giving those juvenile offenders some sort of hearing or review, depending on the crime's severity and how involved they were in committing it. In some instances, Grant says, a juvenile might even get a second review.
For capital murders in the top of the pyramid, for gram and non-capital murders in the middle of the pyramid, and then a felony murder exception for somebody who did not actively participate in the physical killing of the victim at the bottom end of the pyramid.
And Natalie Cato with Human Rights Watch says she supports the new change.
By including this amendment in this bill, HB 7035 will become a bill that complies with the Supreme Court in Miller and Graham because it allows all youths who have been sentenced to life without parole in prison for a chance at redemption. In the U.S., we believe that people under the age of 21 lack the judgment to drink alcohol responsibly, and that those under 18 are too immature to sign a binding contract or to vote. Yet we have laws on the books in this country that allow a 13-year-old to be sentenced to die in prison.
Other measures heading to the fore include a measure cracking down on those who try to take advantage of the elderly and the disabled, and one aimed at limiting nursing home lawsuits. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
A panel of senators swept a spring cleaning proposal through its first committee this week, but Regan McCarthy reports while the measure passed unanimously, both environmentalists and home builders say they have concerns with the plan.
The Senate's comprehensive springs cleanup bill includes provisions that set standards and establish a timeline and funding mechanism to reverse pollution in what were once the state's biggest tourism attraction. But even with a solid framework, Inverness Republican Senator Charlie Dean says reaching those goals will take constant work from the legislature.
I don't ever want to see this bill finalized. Never. I want it open. And it's every time we get to another stage and we've accomplished something, reflect on how did we get there. And more reflection is, how did we mess up? Don't go back and do the same improprieties.
Environmental activists like Audubon Florida Legislative Director Mary Jean Yon are excited about the measure.
We want to join the chorus of people and groups that are very supportive of the efforts that Senator Simmons and the whole team have put into this bill.
But Yon says she's also glad to hear it's a work in progress.
Instead of just restoring, how can we be preemptive and forward-thinking?
And Florida Home Builder Association legislative consultant Keith Hetrick says while he understands the state needs to make changes, he's worried the measure will have a devastating impact on his industry.
The plain effect of the wording now is indefinite moratoriums in unknown but potentially significant areas of the state for the home building industry effective July 1, 2015. And our industry is still a fragile industry, struggling to recover from the Great Recession.
Hetrick's concern is that the bill requires officials to map out which areas near springs need to be treated more carefully, since water in those areas could seep into underground aquifers that feed the springs. Once those areas are defined, home builders wishing to install septic systems would have to follow stricter rules, since septic tanks are sometimes a culprit for the pollution that's muddying springs. Construction firms may either build on a plot of land that's at least an acre in size or use a special type of septic system that helps to remove more of the polluting nutrients like nitrogen. Officials will start with the state's biggest springs, sometimes called first magnitude, like Wakulla.
See this wall is what we're building all the way down this roadway. We're regrading this whole thing all the way down.
That's general contractor and septic tank contractor Ben Withers. He does a lot of work in the Wakulla Springs area, where the county used to have an ordinance requiring anyone installing a new septic tank to use the special nitrogen-reducing variety. But Withers says that meant those projects were more expensive.
Let's just say, for instance, a regular septic system costs $2,000 to $3,000 for a standard in-ground system. And that's that's just a normal 1,000-gallon septic tank with 200 or 300 feet of drain field. when they went to these performance-based units, suddenly they're up, you know, it started off, they were $10,000, $15,000, and they got down into the $6,000, $7,000 range, $8,000. So that made it hard for people.
Withers says he saw a drop in business and septic tanks became an enemy.
My problem is I want to see good, sound science that tells us for sure what's going on, and then we all want to work together, partner up with everybody, and let's fix this.
Both Hetrick and Withers say it doesn't make sense to pass blanket legislation. Instead, they'd say the specialty tank should only be required in spring zones where studies can prove septic tanks and not other sources like agricultural runoff are at fault for the pollution. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. The Florida legislature rolls into its fourth week of the 2014 session on Monday. Ronald J. Eben looks ahead to some of the bills up for debate in the various House and Senate committees.
The House Education Appropriations Committee meets from 12:30 till 2 on Monday, and among the bills on the agenda, one that requires the Office of Early Learning to establish a pilot project in St. Lucie County to assist low-income, at-risk children in developing emergency literacy skills. There is another measure on the agenda that details the requirements for family daycare homes and revises certain requirements and standards relating to child care facilities. The House Business and Professional Regulation Subcommittee meets from 3 to 5. Lawmakers will take up the growler bill that would allow craft breweries to sell half-gallon growlers, the most popular size beer container, in 47 states, which is now prohibited in Florida. There's strong opposition from Anheuser-Busch. At 3 p.m., the Health Care Appropriations Subcommittee will consider a bill setting up standards for telehealth providers. It requires registration of health care professionals before they may use telehealth to deliver health care services. There's also a bill regulating the drug compounding industry, and there is a measure providing enhanced criminal penalties for ticket scalping. A medical marijuana bill is before the Senate Criminal Justice Committee. It's the low THC marijuana and cannabis bill. It would authorize specified physicians to prescribe medical-grade marijuana to children with severe epilepsy. Well, those are some of the items on Monday's legislative calendar. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Finally, tonight is a busy time for traffic in Tallahassee. Spring brings college students out of their dorm rooms and also draws lawmakers to downtown streets for legislative business. With those streets more crowded, the Florida Department of Transportation today tried to educate the walking, driving, and especially biking public how to interact more safely. Florida Public Radio's Stan Jastrzebski went along for the ride.
About 2 months ago, I bought a bike. And about a month ago, I had my first crash. A truck turned in front of me into a parking lot. This morning was the first time since the crash I'd gotten back on the bike. Fortunately, the commute from home was uneventful, and to help quell the remaining demons, I slapped a press sign on my helmet in 175-point font so it was extra visible, and set off for a ride specifically designed for safety. So I've already ridden 6 miles into work, and now it's off from the station to Doak Campbell Stadium to meet the Department of Transportation people. The makeshift press badge, though, flapped in the wind against my helmet, sounding for all the world like an angry wasp in my right ear. At the stadium, I met Achilles Cortellis, who's a researcher with the University of South Florida's Center for Urban Transportation Research. He doesn't believe drivers and bicyclists are incompatible, just forgetful.
The majority of people know the laws. They just don't usually apply them when they're out there.
But his humor underlies a problem facing the state's pedestrian population as a whole.
Florida is number one in pet fatalities based on NHTSA numbers, And that's basically if you take the rate of the how many people die with the population. That's the rate. Florida's number one actually has the double the national average.
According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, almost 2,400 pedestrians were killed in Florida in 2011, a rate of 2.5 deaths per 100,000 people. California, with a population double that of Florida, had a rate one-third better than the Sunshine State. So, with those statistics in mind and a police motorcycle escort to stop traffic on the roads from the stadium to downtown Tallahassee, a group of about a dozen cyclists set off. Many were avid riders, including Alan Hanstein, who brought his mountain bike. He had to work a little harder to ride up the hill to get to the Florida Capitol.
It was okay, just that hill at the end. I came in pretty close to where the road bikers were.
Hanstein regularly takes long rides and says the roads are safer now than in years past, but more can still be done.
I think there's always room for improvement, but definitely people are becoming more aware of bikers on the road, but they need to be careful. I always try and personally be safe myself as a biker. I'm being defensive. But obviously, I hope that everybody else can do the same, even if they're in a car.
After a short water break, it was back on the bikes and back to FSU, where DOT officials handed out bike lights and fluorescent pink or green T-shirts. The riders were all entered into a drawing for a new bicycle as well. But when DOT Chief Safety Officer Laura Hollingsworth began drawing names, a funny thing happened.
Number 5 is Kristen Sloan.
The first two people she called as prospective bike winners weren't there. The third was, however.
Stan Justveski.
That's me.
We were just talking before you all took off that Stan had a little crash a month ago.
That's about right.
And so the bike that he was riding is no longer perfect. But this one will be.
The new Schwinn, sleek and jet black with curvy lines and classic styling, is a beauty. But I couldn't keep it. It'll go to another good home, and I will continue to strap on my helmet and get on my road-worn two-wheeler. And remember to look both ways on the commute from work to home. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Stan Jastrzebski.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Ryan Bank. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. And from Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection partner ExpressJet, with direct flights from Tallahassee to Atlanta connecting to over 315 destinations worldwide. Fares and information available online at delta.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.